This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome into the Diehards on SportsMap Radio Network. It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. A lot going on today. I guess there's two big sports stories of the day. One has actual consequence. The other's just dumb. The big story of consequence taking place in Boston today, that's Jaylen Brown. He's going to miss the remainder of the season with a wrist injury. And then the other one, Bobby, for some reason, in the year 2021, we will discuss Tim Tebow on the program tonight.
You know, anytime that you can start by endearing yourself to your brand new franchise as head coach by bringing back someone who has no business being on the roster, you have to take that opportunity.
You know, anytime you can sign a 33-year-old failed baseball player to play tight end and block for and protect your top overall draft pick of a quarterback, you should do that as well. But we'll get into that a little bit later in the program. I mentioned the Jaylen Brown story today, but just one element of what will be a fascinating stretch here for the NBA regular season. And Bobby, when we've been on together a couple times now, and me and you have both kind of lambasted this play-in tournament, and this is ridiculous. The NBA, you know, has a big enough playoff already, yada, yada, yada. I will say this about the play-in, and this hit me yesterday watching that Celtics Heat game. Any other year, that game has no juice whatsoever, but that was objectively the biggest game of the year for the Celtics. So, you know, it's not just the Celtics, it's all around, but this play-in tournament, not the tournament itself, but it's raised the stakes here at the end of the season for those lower playoff seeds. It's almost more interesting to see who gets six or seven than who gets one or two.
It really is, and I love the whole thing from I can't wait to see what the play-in tournament looks like from a compelling standpoint. And then tonight, Blazers-Rockets, a game that wouldn't mean anything, has huge implications for the Lakers being in the play-in tournament, so I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot going on tonight. We'll get into the NBA standings coming up on the other side. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight on the Diehards. And a couple big games in the NBA tonight, Bobby. And, you know, one of the long-standing complaints, critiques, however you want to characterize it, about the NBA has been that the regular season is irrelevant. And as much as I hate certain elements about the play-in tournament, sure, I do like that it's giving meaning to these end of season games here, especially tonight. I mean, there's what, 3 days left? Correct me if I'm wrong. 3 days left? 4 days left?
The season ends on Sunday.
Season? Okay.
And in fact, what they've done with Saturday, for instance, is we don't know when the matchups are going to take place.
Right, all the games are TBD.
It's going to be jumbled up. Every game starting between 12 and 3:30 Eastern time, Saturday afternoon, every team is playing, and it's going to be like tonight where just about every game on the slate is relevant. So there's not particularly a heavyweight matchup or some game that I would tell people you have to go tune into. But like I was saying there when we opened the show, Blazers-Rockets right now is a matchup that no one would care about except for the fact that it's connected to the Los Angeles Lakers,
right,
and the idea of who's going to be in the play-in tournament.
So I want to talk about this game, and I'm sorry, Andrew Carlson pressing the buttons back in Houston at Sports Map Radio Network headquarters. We're going to bag on your Rockets here a little bit. You're right, completely meaningless game. That being said, I would love to see the Rockets go down tonight because the Lakers have, what, 3 games left? I should never try to do math in my head on the air.
The Blazers and the Lakers both have 4 games left.
Yes.
And you could consider this must win for Portland because of, Andrew, I'm sorry, but quality of competition, where if they have a game in hand over LA and the tiebreaker having won the season series Friday night.
Right.
So what happens now with four games left, and you can look at it like they're two games up, is if you beat the Rockets, you really shouldn't collapse and blow it if you're the Blazers. You should be able to avoid that play-in tournament and force the Lakers to have to go that route.
Right, and the Lakers are off tonight.
Lakers are off tonight.
Right, so they are sitting at home and watching, if they're watching. How, in your mind, as somebody who covers the league directly, how big of a deal is it for the Lakers to get to play? And not necessarily narrative-wise, like, look, I know that LeBron and AD have been hurt, but it is still ridiculous that LeBron and AD's team is going to play in the play-in. Just that statement as it is, and it being the Los Angeles Lakers, the second biggest blue blood in the league, it's ridiculous. That being said, I mean, this is a team with a lot of star power that should go in against whoever grabs that 10 seed, whoever it is right now. It's the Spurs. It's probably going to be the Spurs, right?
So the way the play-in tournament works, it's pretty simple. Is 7 and 8 will play each other to determine the 7 seed.
Yeah.
8 and 9 will play each other. The loser of 7-8 plays the winner of 9-10, excuse me.
Okay.
And that determines who the 8th seed is.
Okay, so we could get Lakers-Warriors in a playing game.
You absolutely could.
Which would be wild. But again,
it's two losses if you're in Los Angeles' seat.
Yep.
But you go down to a hot Steph Curry, your back is against the wall against Memphis or San Antonio, presumably.
So I guess here's what I'd say. The Lakers have LeBron James. They have Anthony Davis. They were an absolute wagon up until – like, this isn't a bad team. This is not a team that's in the play-in because they're a bad team. They're a team that's in the play-in because their two best players have been hurt for the better part of the second half of the season. Does it matter if the Lakers get in the play-in, right? They were considered the finals favorite for so long. Then the injuries happened. Even if they're in the play-in, are they still the finals favorite in your mind?
If you don't like the purple and gold, you're not going to want to hear this. The play-in route might work out better for them. They get to avoid the Clippers. So Portland, for instance, not determined yet. The Clippers have a game on Denver. If the LA Clippers stay in three, they'll play the six, which would be the Blazers, as long as they hold on. If you're the Lakers, as much as we all want to see the battle of LA in the playoffs, you'd much rather put it off as long as possible, if not avoid it.
But the Suns are a good team. It's not like playing the Suns is a cakewalk.
No, but
I thought you were going in a different direction with that when you said it might not be the worst thing. I thought you were going to say like tune-up games or something for LeBron.
Well, there's
and
that
AD.
Too, and we saw it took Anthony Davis is back. It took him a couple of games to shake off the rust, but he looked really strong against Portland and even better in their last outing. He had 42 points, so he just needed a couple of games to shake off the rust. LeBron is presumably going to play tomorrow night against the Knicks, one of the top defenses in the league, so it's a challenge. But like you said, it's an opportunity for him to shake off the rust. I get the idea Phoenix is a legitimate contender to at least get to the Western Conference Finals. If you're LA, I think you want to avoid the Clippers right now. Having gotten Rondo, they're also as big a threat as anyone, and I put them
more so
ahead
than Phoenix.
Of the Suns.
Okay, interesting, because of Rondo.
I think because of that addition and his ability to organize that offense, which is a huge part of why they collapsed last year. As we know from his time with the Celtics, this is someone who is headstrong with championship pedigree. They need that mental toughness as well. Someone who can light a fire under these guys, especially when things are not going well for them. So Rondo checks all the boxes they needed. They've looked fantastic since getting him. And so I would rather play the Suns than the Clippers in a 7-game series.
So you think the Lakers are better off with this extra game?
I think it could work out in their favor. Now, like we said, you go against Steph Curry, and he's on fire. He went for 49 last night, and it felt like he couldn't miss. If he does that to them, then you've got to – you should beat, if you're the Lakers, the Grizzlies or the Spurs.
I was going to say, because the Grizzlies are only half a game out of 8.
Yeah, the Grizzlies are in the mix there. So the seeding, like we said, this is the beauty of the play-in tournament, that so much is still up for grabs. If you're the Lakers and it comes down to playing the Grizzlies or the Spurs, you should win that game.
Sure.
So it's a bit anticlimactic in the end there, but nonetheless, those games.
But if they get the 7 and they win, they don't have to play either of those teams, assuming Golden State stays.
If they go to 7 and win, or if they're 8th and they win, which they're not going to fall to 8th, but you get the idea. 7, 8, win that, and you're automatically the 7 seeds taken care of.
Okay, so this is weird. The play-in tournament that LeBron James said last week somebody should be fired for putting together,
once praised as a great idea.
Well, that too, I'm going to say, the play-in tournament that LeBron doesn't want, that a lot of people don't want because they see it as a way for the league to favor players like LeBron is going to indirectly favor LeBron because he's going to have to play in it even though he doesn't want to.
That is correct. That's how I view this shaking out.
There's been very few instances in the NBA in recent years where things don't go the way of the superstars. This is going to help LeBron James, but he doesn't want it. Like, part of me likes that. Like, I felt like, you know, beyond the regular season not mattering, if you're a superstar in the NBA, you're probably on a top 10 team. Because in the NBA, 9 times out of 10, the better player on the floor, unless you're the Boston Celtics, the better player on the floor, and we'll get to that in the next segment, 9 times out of 10, the better player on the floor wins the game, regardless of the rest of the rosters. So if you're one of the top 10 players in the league, you're probably on a top 10 team. You know, so in addition to the regular season not mattering, I don't want to say that players haven't had to work for it, because obviously you have to work to become a top 10 player. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But, you know, there was an element of the regular season not mattering because you had these teams get off to, you know, starts like 30-10, 30-8 on the season, and then you just coast in the second half, and you ended up with one of the top 3 seeds, and that's really all that mattered. That doesn't really feel like it's the case this year.
Yeah, everything matters this year. Now, there are teams like the Bucks, for instance, who over and over again failed in the postseason because they could only play one style. They don't care about getting the number one seed. They don't care about being the third seed out of the big three in the Eastern Conference. They just want to work on, you know, being more flexible come playoff time so they're ready for whatever a team might throw at them. But that still means the regular season matters. And this postseason, adding the play-in tournament, has made it so that the standings are more relevant. And that's why, like I said, you get a night like tonight where there is no marquee matchup, but every game on the slate has relevance. It has meaning. And there's a lot on the line for these teams as they jockey for optimal position.
So that, like, almost in my mind, like, give me a March Madness kind of day, right? You're, or, like,
that's what Saturday is going to be.
What?
Every team.
But you said it's all between 12 and 3, right?
All the start times.
So, like, stagger it. Like, what was the league? Did maybe it was the NBA that did this. No, it was baseball. When they'd line up all the games on the last day, so if there were, like, 5 important games, they'd all start at different times. So I'm saying pick, like, you know, play most of the games whenever you want. Like, Celtics, Knicks, probably going to end up being inconsequential at the end of the day. Forget that one. But find the 5 most impactful games. Use analytics if you have to figure out which games can sway probabilities. Again, I'm not going to try to do math on the air. But then give me starts at, like, do it like Christmas. Give me starts at 12, 2:30, 5, 8, 10. Like, give me that. Put them all on one channel. And they're, like, that's how I would do it. Don't give me... Because if all the games start between 12 and 3, they're all going to be on at the same time. You almost are going to need an NBA red zone sort of thing, right? Whereas if you staggered them like that, like Christmas Day, and I think that's the example I was trying to think of. If you staggered them like Christmas Day, each game becomes must watch. Like, hopefully, that's the future of this.
Yeah, it would have to be a few at a time. You can't stagger 15 games.
Well, I'm
like
saying
that.
Pick the big, right. Yeah, pick the 5 sure. biggest.
But
and then,
here's the other interesting element is that the NBA Saturday night games on ABC get good ratings. So I don't know why they wouldn't continue to do so.
Exactly. Or like the NBA does with Sunday Night Football, right? On week 17, or it's going to be 18 now, and just figure out that marquee game, figure out a way to get that all eyes on that game. We'll talk more about this on the other side. I want to get into the Eastern Conference as well. What's going on with the play in there? How big of an impact does Jaylen Brown's injury make? We'll discuss all of that real quick. Quick break. Keep it here. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alex Barth alongside Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference, Bobby. We just did the Western Conference in the last segment. We're talking NBA tonight. At least early on in the show with the season winding down. We'll get into Tim Tebow in a little bit. We might get into some baseball in a little bit as well. But the big news of the day in the NBA from a team not in action today in a game where, like you said, all the games tonight are consequential. But the big story, Jaylen Brown, he's having wrist surgery. I'm not going to try to pronounce the name of the ligament
that he tore. We just say
it
ligament.
It was something. It has 30 letters in it probably. I don't know. But he has to have surgery on that. He's out for the year and... I guess before we get into the consequences, here's a guy, and it kind of sums up what the Celtics team has been all year, but Jaylen Brown, 24 years old, was having a career year, career high in points, career high in assists, shooting lights out. I mean, he's taken on a leadership role. And that's all between, I mean, he missed time with a hip injury. He missed time with a shoulder injury. He was diagnosed with knee tendonitis like two months ago, I think, and that's something that's going to affect him for the rest of his career. He'd actually missed the last three games with an ankle injury. And then they come out today and say, "Wrist." So like when I actually had to go back and double take, because I started writing the story for 98.5thesportshub.com, shameless plug, and I like double check. I was like, wait, no, not wrist, ankle. He was out because of his ankle, but I guess the wrist thing happened too. So a guy that's just battled through a ton this season. Obviously, we know what he did during the break last year and in the offseason. A guy who on the court and off the court has put people on his back, and this is just a tough setback for him, and you can't help but feel for the guy. And he's banged up head to toe, and you hope that he can take this offseason, and we don't know how long this offseason is going to be yet, but you hope he can take this offseason and really just kind of rest his body and get healthy.
Well, so with the wrist, it's interesting because he never missed a game because of it. And yet he's constantly favoring it and looking at it and shaking off his hand during games. So it's clearly bothering him, but it was never on the injury report. It was just something you could observe watching any Celtics game for a long stretch now. And then it is interesting that he's out with an ankle injury. So it's not like he came back against Miami on Sunday, hurt his wrist, and it turns out to be season-ending surgery for him. No, they went and looked at this while he's missing time because of another injury. And sure enough, it requires surgery. The timeline for this is going to be 3 to 6 months. That puts him at September if it's on the four-month side of the time frame. So he's a righty shooter. It's on his left wrist. It's going to significantly impact his offseason workouts, though, and what he's able to do, what he has to stay away from. Now, he did show this was a truncated offseason we just had in the NBA, and he maximized it. He is able to make an impressive leap with such a short time frame. Right. So it stands to reason that he can do it again. And then, of course, the regular season is a great developing ground. But this is clearly a significant blow to Jaylen Brown's progression.
And it's a significant blow to whatever's left of the Celtics season at this point. I don't know that this is that seismic because after, like, let's say the Celtics beat the Heat on Sunday, right? And if they do, they're in the sixth seed right now. They're tied with Miami, but they would have that tiebreaker for the sixth seed. They stay out of the play-in tournament. Also, that would have been a big win. Let's say they beat the Heat again on Tuesday. All of a sudden, you have momentum. And maybe, just maybe, there's a little hope for the Celtics team. Instead, I know it was a six-point game, but Bobby, they got blown out.
Yeah.
They got,
that was cosmetic.
Don't look at the scoreboard, right. They got blown out. They got run out of their own building, not just in the biggest game of the year, not just on Mother's Day, but on Tommy Heinsohn Day. Tommy Heinsohn, for those of you who don't know, a legendary Celtic player, coach, and broadcaster. And if there's one thing Tommy was known for, it was grit. They used to give out on the broadcast these things called Tommy points for the player that showed the most hustle. So to come out and with that effort on Tommy Day, Tommy Heinsohn passed away about, what was it, 4 months ago.
Yeah.
5 months ago and had a relationship with all the players
on the
team.
Before the start of the season.
Or it was like a weekend because they'd been playing. I think it was like a weekend.
Were they already
underway?
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, this sounds dumb. You might not get it if you're not from Boston, but this was a guy who was ingrained in the organization, who was as much of a Celtic as Larry Bird, as Bill Russell, and knew all of these players personally, and a guy who preached and was all about hustle. To come out and show that effort in the biggest game of the year with the season on the line, with jobs on the line, I believe in that game. Technically the Celtics can still grab that sixth seed. I think they can move as high as five if things really bounce their way. But, you know, Jaylen Brown's injury to me it's not seismic in the sense that, oh, they're going to have to play in the play-in now. I think that was decided on Sunday. It's seismic in the sense that this could get really ugly down the stretch. And I think if you're Wick Grosbeck in Celtics ownership, I'm not even going to say Danny Ainge. I'm going to say Wick Grosbeck in Celtics ownership. If you are in those seats, you are watching these last few games very carefully. Who's out there putting effort in? Who isn't? And that doesn't just mean the players. That means the coaching staff as well.
See, that's interesting. I think we're at a point where the Celtics should start to decelerate and hit the break, because whatever hope there was of, if this team is healthy, the rotation looks a lot better with Fournier coming in at the deadline, Aaron Nesmith starting to emerge, and now you look at it and say, their second best player is not going to be there. Whatever hope, whatever ideal optimistic outlook someone had, that should have disintegrated with this news
about
Jaylen Brown being out. I don't question Brad Stevens' effort, but, and I'll give you to help out your take here regarding Stevens, the Miami Heat reiterated last night, just like they did in the bubble, they are the mentally tougher team than the Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
They were ready to play from the opening tip. Boston went on a run, and they didn't wilt. They made the winning plays necessary to hold them off at the end. And the Celtics, they made it competitive, but they didn't even tie the game. So it goes to show you who has the edge in that perspective. And so you can look at it from a general outlook and say, two games at home, you just have to win one. You should be fine. You can still do it without Jaylen Brown. And if you win that game, then you should be able to hold on to the sixth seed and force the Heat to go through the play-in tournament. But last night's loss and the way that first half looked was indicative of much larger problems for the Celtics.
Yeah, so I would say, first of all, yeah, they weren't ready. And Jaylen Brown's an emotional leader, not having him hurt. But that was an – and Brad said it after the game. He needs to be better. I think he said it five times. I need to be better. I think somebody had the counter. It's five or six times he said that. And, no, I don't want to see this team take their foot off the pedal. And I know the season's over, and that's why I don't want to see them take their foot off the pedal. The problem with this team all season, Bobby, and you follow them closer than me, all right, you cover them closer than me, pardon me, but the problem with the Celtics team all year has been will. There's just been stretches where they haven't wanted it, and that was with, you know, stakes. Now there's no stakes. This is an audition for next year. These last, what is it, four games they have? These last four games they have, and then whatever playoff scraps they get, this is an audition. Who's showing me that they want to be a part of this team? Who is showing me that they want to be a Boston Celtic? And who's checking out? Who's checking out and collecting a paycheck and saying, woe is us, we're the Boston Celtics, we're never healthy, we're always close, we're young, we're injured, blah, blah, blah. No, who's not making excuses? Who's going to go out there and put their best basketball on tape and show me they want to be a part of this team next year? And that includes the coach. And you know what? If they all do that, there's two ways this. If they all do that, and you have a bunch of guys who want to try and they still can't win, I'm looking at the person who brought them all in. And on the flip side of that, if you have a bunch of guys who all quit on the team, who put together a roster full of quitters? That's what I'm looking at if I'm Celtics ownership, is what is these guys' mentality and how did that mentality get instilled? I think those are two huge questions the Celtics need to answer down the stretch here, because it's all about next year now. They need to start looking ahead to next year, and I don't think they can do another one of these tinkering off seasons where you add Tristan Thompson and you add Jeff Teague, and oh yeah, you know, we could have gotten Doug McDermott and we could have gotten Miles Turner, but we'll go value. We'll go value. Tristan Thompson's close enough to the guy, other guys we could have gotten, right? Jeff Teague's close enough to the other guys we could have gotten, whether it's Teague or whether it's Victor Oladipo or whatever. We'll go budget. We'll get this trade exception because maybe we can have some fun with that. You won't, but maybe we can have some fun with that. I think they need to actually do something this offseason, not just twiddle their thumbs.
I think a lot of what you said there would make for a compelling speech in the locker room. But if I'm Brad Stevens, I would then pivot to Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, wait for everyone else to leave the room and say, but not you guys, take it easy.
But that's the exact problem. Those guys need to set the tempo. Those guys need to set the energy.
The most important thing the Celtics can do is get to the offseason without anyone, especially their major players, requiring a significant surgery, because so much of this is hard to sort out and untangle from playing in this pandemic-impacted, condensed schedule of a season that has pulled most teams around the league within 500, for better or worse, depending on where you were coming into the year. And so with the Celtics, it's every other night, constantly traveling, never at full health. You didn't have that impressive a rotation to begin with. And so there's all these issues you have to sort with. They show mental toughness in being able to always come back from their deficits, but they also show that weakness where they need to be stronger when it's not getting off to a good start.
See, that's the
letting
thing.
Misses on offense impact them defensively. So there's things that were there before this season. There's other elements where it looks like it's a product of the pandemic, but you can't definitively state that.
I can definitively state it's not, because every other team had to go through that. Every other team had to go through
almost
that.
Almost every team in the league is around 500.
But I would say there's teams with better rosters who are better. We're going to pick this up on the other side, because I'm not done with Bobby for his wrong Celtics takes. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Yo.
You're listening to The Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to The Diehards. Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight on the SportsMap Radio Network. You'll have to excuse me if my voice is a little raspy. I was inhaling Skittles during the break because I am a child and I love candy. But I want to pick up where we left off, Bobby. So the Boston Celtics, right, was this year an issue of just the pandemic hit them hard, or is it a deeper issue? I'm not going to say the pandemic didn't hurt because, it, you know, these guys are away from their families and it's the condensed schedule. That's absolutely tangible. But they weren't the only team going through the pandemic schedule. Every other team was. And you can say, well, most teams regressed to around 500 this year. Okay. How many of the, but at the end of the day, teams are going to have better records than them. The Atlanta Hawks are going to have a better record than them. The New York Knicks are going to have a better record than them. The Miami Heat. Do those teams have better rosters than the Celtics? And I know that there's been complaints about the depth on the Celtics roster. And yes, their second unit is not what you want it to be. They've had to rely heavily on rookies. They had to rely heavily on Jeff Teague in the first half of the season. I think they put a lot of eggs in the Tristan Thompson basket, which has had mixed results depending on which point of the season you look at. But there were seven teams, Bobby, seven teams that have more than one all-star on the roster. And as I said earlier in the show, I believe that in the NBA, the better player on the floor wins 9 times out of 10. Celtics have two of the 30 best players in the league. How come of those seven teams, the Celtics are the only one even flirting with a 500 record? I would say that goes to coaching. As talked about Tommy Heinsohn last segment, as the great Tommy Heinsohn said, there's only one analytic I care about. When it comes to analytics, there's only one stat I care about: wins.
Yeah, but the better player needs help. You look at Joel Embiid last year, and he had a roster with three other guys on max contracts. The fit wasn't good, and the coaching was a problem. They finish in sixth. And so it's not always, if you're one of the top 10 guys in the league, you're on one of the top two teams in your conference, for instance. It takes more than that. And that's where the Celtics issues started, is that they came into the year with issues relating to the talent around Jalen and Jason. Then you add in the injuries. They start the year without Kemba, and they really left the spot open for Romeo Langford, especially because Nesmith couldn't play his way into the rotation, wasn't ready in the beginning of the season. And so with Langford being out, no real replacement there, the depth becomes even more problematic.
Right.
And now you're placing this heavy burden on Jalen and Jason every single night. There's one day off, then a game, one day off, then a game, with constant travel and the toll that it takes to log around 40 minutes constantly and have to do all of the heavy lifting and then repeat it every other night.
Sure.
It's just hard to sustain that. So I think a lot of ways the Celtics, and you can look at individuals, did show mental toughness, but the problems they had related to this season were difficult to overcome. And so I'm curious to see what it looks like next year. And also, there are issues that lingered from past seasons. Like we said, the Miami Heat were mentally tougher than them in the postseason. And even though the Raptors lost, you can make a case for that as well. After that, OG Anunoby buzzer beater three avoided them going down 3-0, and they probably would have got swept and packed it in. So there are issues relevant and concerning that stem from longer than this season, but at the same time, there's a lot related to this pandemic-impacted condensed season and not having enough talent around their top
but
guys.
But what I'm saying is you're almost like putting the two together. Like, the pandemic was so much harder on Jalen and Jason because they didn't have the supporting cast. I don't get how that makes sense. Every other team had to deal with the pandemic. Jalen and Jason had each other. I feel like that's a point that gets overlooked when people say, no, there wasn't enough help for the Jays. Why weren't they helping each other? Look at a team like the Milwaukee Bucks. They got Drew Holiday. Sure, he had a rough year. I don't know that Drew Holiday is as good as either Jalen or Jason. I don't think he is. Did Giannis suffer? Did the pandemic make Giannis not having enough help make the Bucks worse? They're the three seed.
They fell back to the pack.
They ran away with the
one seed in the Eastern Conference last year, and this year they're in third.
Well, I would argue,
what I'd also say is, look at the teams who went the furthest in the bubble and the toll it's taken on them this season on top of a condensed schedule. Miami, is more talented than being the sixth or the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference. The Lakers, LeBron's injury was fluky. He got his ankle clipped from behind, but Anthony Davis goes down as a product of stress that he's putting onto his leg. The Clippers, you know, a little bit better, but kind of meandering around. The Nuggets in fourth seed after pushing the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. All these teams fell back to the pack to a certain extent.
So then explain the New York Knicks.
I'm really interested. I was just saying this to a colleague of mine today, to see what the Knicks look like relative to the rest of the league next season. Because like I said, this year, just about every team is around 500.
Right.
So what does it look like for them moving forward? Is their defense still going to be one of the top units in the league? Is their offense still going to be able to produce when necessary? Because they rely so heavily on Derrick Rose and that bench to get them across the finish line. And another trait of Tom Thibodeau teams is he comes in and they have a great year one, and then it goes downhill steadily. So I'm curious to see what the Knicks look like next season.
Well, but again, are the Knicks, and I'll throw the Hawks in here too, did they have a more talented roster than the Celtics or the Heat for that matter? Like, I don't know. And sure, like you said, going deep in the bubble, it might wear you out, but I don't know that to that extent where the Knicks should finish the season 3, 4, 5 games ahead of the Celtics. I don't know that the Celtics have a much more talented roster than the Hawks do, I believe. And again, I know the Celtics went deeper, but does it really make that much of a difference where they're going to finish 3, 4, 5 games behind a team like that? I think that the pandemic hit everybody. I get the Celtics went a little deeper in the bubble, but the pandemic hit everybody. When it comes to the help, I really think people are forgetting Jalen and Jason, and to an extent, Kemba, were they helping each other? And let's put the pandemic stuff aside. So, because this is a popular talking point, Jalen and Jason and Kemba didn't have enough help. Do you believe they were helping each other? Do you believe they should be enough help for each other? And if not, isn't that a red flag that you might need to blow up this core if you're the Boston Celtics?
I think that with Kemba, he's starting to get back and look healthy now, and they've done a great job managing his knee this season.
Yeah.
But I think that if you put the Celtics front office on truth serum, they'd amnesty his contract if they could.
Well, we know Danny Ainge was trying to trade him at the deadline. So,
and in the offseason, there were rumors, and a lot of people believe that they were looking to get Jrue Holiday and to move Kemba simultaneously. And so what I would say is that those guys, they actually do help enough. Kemba's situation is what it is an aging, undersized point guard that puts so much pressure onto his knees. It's not a surprise to see how he looks as he reaches the 30-year milestone. And it's going to be real interesting. Another compelling point you brought up before the break was, what is this ownership group willing to spend on this team? And so that's where it's really going to get interesting.
Well, Wick Grosbeck has said they're fine going into the cap.
They've said it repeatedly, but if you look at their track record, they're typically around, I'm going off the top of my head here, which is dangerous, but it's typically around $13 million into the tax, I believe.
Yeah.
And so what that in essence means is, yes, we'll re-sign Evan Fournier, but we're also going to have to trade someone like a Marcus Smart to stay within our traditional budget. So it's going to be very interesting to see what ownership is willing to do and how far they'll extend themselves this offseason.
See, so that's an interesting point. For me, it's not so much about like the Celtics' shortcomings roster-wise, and I touched about it a little bit. I can't remember if it was the beginning of this segment or last segment. It's not so much about owner-wise financially what they won't spend. It's about the future capital. And Danny Ainge is just so locked into having these future assets. And, you know, the Nets trade, he wouldn't let that one go. He kept kicking the can down the road. And I don't know if it's just he wants to be prepared or if he doesn't, you know, as long as there were assets left from the Nets trade, he couldn't finally be judged on it or whatever. But, you know, When are they just going to say, you know, and we hear all the time in Boston, they're still young. There's still a window. Yeah, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are young, but they're not. Jaylen Brown's going to be in his fifth NBA season next year. Jason Tatum is fourth. They're not young by NBA standards anymore. They're in their prime. At what point do the Celtics need to say, and by the way, I believe we've passed this point. I believe this point was going into this season. At a certain point, the Celtics have to say, and Danny Ainge has to say, you know what? This is it. This is the year. We're done with the future. We're done with the assets. He's got to push all his chips into the table and say, this is it. I believe that was trading for Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, or Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo, which they reportedly could have done before the season. Instead, they trade Gordon Hayward for a trade exception. They lose a very talented scorer from their roster, which has killed them all year, essentially give him Gordon Hayward for For the most part, nobody. They basically traded Gordon Hayward for Evan Fournier, which to me is a wash, probably. You know, where they could have gotten two players who fill needs that they have. Instead of getting the same player that they were losing with, they could have filled two big needs that they have. Oh, and they could have had them for the whole season. But Danny Ainge had to have all his options on the table. He still had to have the future. At what point does Danny Ainge go into it and say, you know what, you know, I know it's, I don't like giving up my future assets. I don't like touching my draft picks. I don't want to touch the trade exceptions. But we need this player. We need a rim-protecting big. We need a true point guard. You know, at what point do the Celtics do that? Because I think that has to be soon. I think ownership needs to put some pressure on. We talked about last week, how much did Robert Kraft impact the Patriots drafting Mac Jones and Bill Belichick drafting Mac Jones? That was an out-of-character move, but at a certain point, you got to push the chips to the table. Whit Grosbeck needs to come in, I think, and do that soon and say, it's time to push those chips in. If you don't start winning with these kids, they're going to go somewhere else that will win with them.
And that's why the Celtics are eyeballing Bradley Beal. He might not be available this offseason.
Oh, that's a dream for me. That's a dream.
The Wizards have had as fun a season as any team in the league right now, and they're in 10th doing this. So Beal, who's a very loyal guy, there's a lot of comparisons. He's a close relationship with Damian Lillard, a guy he's sought counsel from. He probably isn't going to turn around this offseason after the year they're having and ask out. Can't say definitively. Maybe he looks at it and says, we can't get much better than this. I should go while I'm still on the young side. That was something Kevin Garnett regretted, not pushing out earlier, even though he didn't want to leave Minnesota. Nonetheless, I look at the Celtics situation, and let's start with Gordon Hayward. He was not willing to come back to be the fourth option on this team. Now, you can argue that maybe Brad Stevens should have been able to reach him, carve out a more enticing role, and say the way that we're going to stagnate the lineup, most of the time, you'll be the second option. Maybe we can get you some run as the number one option. But nonetheless, it wasn't tenable for Hayward, and it definitely wouldn't have shaken out that way at the end of a game. Nothing the Celtics could have done on that front to convince him to stay. With Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, sure, it would have been great to have more quality rotation players at the start of the season. But when it comes to Turner specifically, it's a large contract for what is the running back of the NBA, the center position.
Bobby,
and this is someone who is not particularly good defensively. I know he has a reputation because of his shot blocking, but he can't switch. He can't even really hold his own, just locking down a player quickly and getting back to his man and recovering. He is an average three-point shooter, which is his best asset offensively. So a lot of times you'll run into Miles Turner sets a screen, defense leaves him open, and you're living with a 35% three-point shooter instead of Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker. So it would not have been a good fit. That's why Ainge looked around to say, hey, if we take Turner, does anyone want him? And the league said no, because of his contract, because of his style of play, because of his position. So that was the right decision.
What I'm telling you is they should have wanted Turner. And so it
would have been a mistake. Trust me, Danny Ainge made the right read on that. And the next part that Ainge has to come around on, because he's seen it over and over again, and it was really costly last year, and you could make the case this year as well, is that he looks at a situation logically. For instance, I don't want to trade two first-round picks to rent Davis Bertans. But that's the price. Sometimes you have to overpay to make your team better. In the hardest league to win in, if you have a legitimate title opportunity, take it and live with the consequences. When it comes to this year, he didn't want to give up the necessary capital to get Aaron Gordon,
right,
because they'd have to overpay. Aaron Gordon in the five on this team might have made an enormous difference for what their ceiling is.
Yes or no, do the Celtics play in the play-in this year if they have a full season of Miles Turner and Doug McDermott instead of a half a season of Evan Fournier?
Yes.
Do you think they're still in the play-in?
I think they're in the exact same spot they are now with Turner and McDermott. I would appreciate McDermott more than Turner.
30 seconds here because we're up against it, but we've done like 30 minutes of Celtics on national radio. Because we broke down the Western Conference play-in tournament. Eastern Conference play-in tournament, it's going to be the Celtics, Hornets, Wizards, and Pacers. The order might change, but real quick, your thoughts on the Eastern Conference play-in.
I think it's going to be fascinating. I think the Celtics, they should be able to win that first game, but they got smashed by the Hornets in Charlotte a couple weeks ago. And then you run the risk of running into the Wizards in a winner-take-all situation. Washington 7-3 in their last 10, one of the hottest teams in the league. If they're going to have Beal healthy again and Westbrook, that team is clicking right now. So Boston, they might not just find themselves in the play-in tournament. They might not find themselves in the legitimate playoffs.
I think there's a real chance of that. All right. That's first hour out of the way basketball coming up on the other side. I can't believe we're doing this, Bobby. It's 2021, but we are going to discuss NFL player Tim Tebow. Don't miss it. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards. Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. Bob, you just pointed out Chris Berman gets an extension to ESPN today. Very cool. But Kenny Mayne got let go. Boy, I'm just thinking, like, sick home from school, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Some long-form Kenny Mayne piece comes on after sports, and that guy could paint a picture.
He was phenomenal at it, and just someone who brought a laid-back vibe to such a high-pressure job and was phenomenal at it, being able to balance levity and humor with the soup du jour in the sports world. So Kenny Mayne, a legend who's been there our entire lives, so hats off to him on a phenomenal career, and I'm excited to see what he pivots to next.
Me too, and hopefully it's some long form, you know, whatever thing. But it is also good to see Berman back. I mean, they should give him a lifetime contract for that show.
I think he unofficially has what he's the Schwami. He's been there literally since day one of ESPN. So I don't think he's going anywhere.
All right, we are going. I cannot believe it. 2021, Tim Tebow back in the NFL.
It's been over 3,000 days.
That conversation on the other side. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.